From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, May 22nd, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listener support and by Modern Pest Services, committed to taking an intelligent approach to pest control. Learn more at modernpest.com. And by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
The daily case count of COVID-19 in Maine has increased by 71 since yesterday, and two more people have died. The State Center for Disease Control is recording a total of 1,948 cases and 75 deaths. The CDC has lowered the threshold to conduct universal testing at congregate care facilities. The agency implemented the new policy this week at Cape Memory Care in Cape Elizabeth, where one staff member tested positive. Universal testing at the facility then uncovered a total of 57 confirmed cases in 12 staffers and 45 residents. New unemployment numbers for Maine are out today from the State Department of Labor, and in April, the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for Maine was 10.6%. That's up from 3.1% in March, but less than the federal rate for April, which is nearly 15%. And the state's Ethics Commission today broadened its investigation of a dark money group that's been working against Central Maine Power's proposed power line through Western Maine. Fred Bever has more.
The panel directed the group called Stop the Corridor to provide commission staff with unredacted documentation of who its funders are, why they are involved, and what the group spends the money on. Lawyers for STC argued against releasing the information, saying that the commission should rely on their own assertions about specifics of the funding. Commissioner Richard Nass pushed back.
You're asking us to take your word on purpose and spending and receipts without the complete record, and we can't do that, and nor are we going to release it to the public necessarily unless there's a violation. So, I mean, that's smoke and mirrors.
Stop the Corridor first made waves in 2018 with an advertising campaign that condemned Governor Janet Mills for supporting the CMP project. The commission says it has no jurisdiction over how that general PR effort was funded. But more recently, the group made $80,000 worth of in-kind contributions to a petition drive asking that voters weigh in on the project. The commission wants to know whether STC now should be subject to campaign finance transparency rules that usually apply to political action and ballot question committees. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And in weather tonight, skies clearing north, clouds increasing south with lows in the mid-40s to the mid-50s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny north, otherwise partly cloudy with highs in the high 50s up to the mid-70s. As we've heard, Maine's unemployment rate is up significantly for April, but state labor officials say the real number is likely higher because of several factors related to the COVID-19 pandemic. Mal Leary has details.
The official rate for April was 10.6%, but state labor department economist Glenn Mills says it was probably closer to 14%. The number of jobs lost in a month was over 100,000, and to be counted as unemployed, a person has to be not just out of work, but also looking for work.
Many of them ended up being classified as not in the labor force. Therefore, the unemployment rate is not fully reflecting the amount of job loss.
Mills says unemployment is measured using data from a survey of households and payrolls. But many of those who have lost jobs have not been looking for another. Others stayed home because of a fear of contracting COVID-19. Mills says it could be a year before researchers get a clear picture of what happened. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Routine appointments for health care came to a halt in March when Mainers hunkered down at home as the state braced for a possible surge in the coronavirus. The sudden drop in patients hit independent physicians especially hard. They saw steep declines in revenue. Now, as the state reopens, some of those doctors say they are starting to emerge, but their future is still tenuous. Patty White reports as part of our series, Deep Dive Coronavirus.
In mid-March, Dr. Courtney Linville was preparing for an open house. She had just moved her primary care practice, Wiscasset Family Medicine, from two old homes into a new renovated space down the street. But just days before she planned to officially welcome patients into her new office, the first case of COVID-19 was identified in Maine, and everything changed.
We lost between 40% and 50% of our business for March and April.
Linville had to make adjustments that were right for public health, but terrible for business.
We were trying to not let anybody come in who has any symptoms at all, no fever, cough, sore throat, and that's some of the bread and butter of primary care, is seeing people who are sick.
Her practice transitioned to telemedicine, which helped. But Linville says the reimbursement can be significantly less than an office visit, depending on the type of insurance. And appointments were still down overall.
You know, we had people who didn't want to bother us, so they wouldn't call or they wouldn't come in or they didn't know it was an option.
Linville let go of a third of her staff within the first 2 weeks. She eventually got a loan from the Paycheck Protection Program and was able to hire back four employees. But the loan only covers 8 weeks of payroll, and she's not clear what will happen when that funding dries up. Patient visits have been ticking up in May, but Linville doesn't receive reimbursements immediately for the medical care she provides. That means the effects of the lost business from March and April will hit sometime this summer.
Then we'll have to figure out if we can continue to pay a staff this size based on the visits that we had in March and April. And obviously we're doing everything we can to try to save money and squirrel it away. But there's no guarantee that those March and April numbers are going to be enough to hold us through, let's say, August and September and beyond.
Linville's 50% drop in business was a lot, but other providers saw even steeper declines.
Oh, 90%. I mean, it really dropped.
Dr. Karen Bossi specializes in obstetrics and gynecology at Waterville Women's Care. Once the state shut down, she says the practice canceled almost all gynecology appointments. A Paycheck Protection Program loan helped them avoid letting go of any staff. It was a scary time that Bossi says is just now starting to shift. The practice is back up to about 60% of normal volume.
It's still scary time, even now, as far as just the future so unknown right now is, are things going to get back to normal? Are we going to be able to go back to where we were in January or the last year?
Dan Morin of the Maine Medical Association says there are roughly 400 to 500 independent physicians in Maine who serve tens of thousands of patients, and the business impact of the coronavirus has been severe.
They don't have a lot of operating reserves. The strains of the COVID crisis are less acute for physicians who work in large systems. Those systems have a lot more resources to respond to the crisis.
Dr. Michael Clark, a family practice physician at Lifespan Family Healthcare in Newcastle, says once the coronavirus hit Maine, he thought the worst.
I know myself and other colleagues I spoke with have really wondered if this was it, if this was, you know, kind of the nail in the coffin for independent small town primary care.
Clark's practice went from a patient load of a few dozen per day to just a handful almost overnight. He furloughed two staff members and put others on a reduced schedule. As his practice scrambled to figure out a way to stay viable, they quickly embraced telemedicine. Within a month, he says, they replaced up to half of their patient volume with virtual visits. Now, that's risen to about 85%.
Telehealth was the key for us because it gave us a sufficiently robust patient visit, you know, to really connect with patients and do the work that we need. We're really surprised, actually, about how much you can do through telemedicine.
Clark says he wasn't able to provide telemedicine before because of federal regulatory burdens, but those have been temporarily lifted during the pandemic, and he hopes the changes will become permanent. It's a tool, coupled with some federal loans, that have kept his practice stable, and he sees telemedicine as a key component of primary care's success for the long term.
My fingers are crossed, but I really think we can do this, and we can make it through this into a viable future.
It could be something good that comes out of this crisis, Clark says. More options to provide care that helps patients and independent physicians. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Along Maine's northern border with Canada, communities on either side are closely connected historically, culturally, economically. But the COVID-19 pandemic has temporarily severed that connection. The governments of the two countries have suspended non-essential travel along the border. Robbie Feinberg visited one border town to see how the closure is affecting people's lives and their livelihoods.
Gary Terrio hops off his motorcycle and walks into the Madawaska Tasty Freeze, a roadside ice cream and takeout stand just a short hop from the Canadian border.
Do I have a number or something? Yeah, 7.
As he waits for his milkshake, Terrio peers across the St. John River towards Edmundston, New Brunswick, less than a mile away. He says these communities have long been connected by their mutually dependent economies and shared heritage.
Well, a good example is my mother was born in Edmundston, which is right across the border. My father was born in Van Buren, and so half my relatives are over there and the other half are over here. So there's a lot of back and forth, visiting aunts, uncles, grandparents. There was always a back and forth on the border.
Over the past half century, Madawaska has seen its population gradually diminish as the local paper mill has been forced to lay off workers. But local residents say the town has maintained a symbiotic relationship with Edmundston. Americans go across to see family, get a haircut, or gamble at the casino. Canadians, meanwhile, often come over for cheaper gas and milk, then stay and visit local shops and restaurants. But that all came to a halt 2 months ago, when the U.S. and Canada blocked non-essential travel across the border, and have since extended the restrictions until at least late June. And today, the normally steady flow of cars passing along the Madawaska-Edmundston International Bridge has slowed to a trickle. Terrio says he's still allowed to go across at times to buy materials for his garage door business, but other visits to see family, for example, are prohibited.
So I was crossing every day. I was residing there and working here. And then when the decision came that they were closing the borders, because my business is probably 95% in the States, we made the decision at that time to stay here until things can iron themselves out. We're frustrated on one hand, but on the other hand, you always have to consider for the safety purpose, we've got to do what we have to do, you know?
Well, you know, the struggle is real, obviously, that we see them struggling. We hear of it.
Gary Picard is the Madawaska town manager. He says the border restrictions have had a big impact on local shops and stores, as many rely on Canadian visitors for a large chunk of their sales.
One could almost assume that the revenue from Canada is basically been wiped out here during this period.
That it, right? 173.
The impact has been particularly acute at gas stations and convenience stores. Less than a mile from the local border crossing, Tim Lossier has run Bob's Service Center with his sister for close to 30 years.
Probably 60% of my business is Canadians. So when they closed the bridge down, I think it was like the 19th of March, I mean, we let our workers go. So it's just my sister and I working the store now. And it's been like that for 2 months. And it looks like it's going to be like that for another month. And I mean, I've lost probably 2,500 people coming through the door a week.
Lossier says he understands the reasons behind the border restrictions, but he worries that even if the border does reopen soon, some of his regular shoppers will still be hesitant to cross.
And even when they do come back, I mean, I don't think we're going to get all our customers back, because they'll be more strict at the border and people are going to be scared to come over here, or, you know, I don't think we're going to, you know, it'll be back to normal. It might take 5 or 6 years, I think.
And while some in Madawaska say federal and state restrictions are important to protect public health during the pandemic, others would like to see them loosened even more quickly. Business owner Vincent Fralichardi says he hasn't seen his wife and cat for nearly 3 months because of the border closures. And with reported cases of COVID-19 being so low in both Aroostook County and New Brunswick, he believes it's time to allow more visitors to frequent the area safely.
It's going to be people from Boston area, people from outside the area, people from Canada coming in for a week or whatever to go, you know, do what they want to do, the hotels and stuff like that. So it's hard. We need to tap into the people outside the state of Maine to bring the resources in to keep our way of life going.
federal officials have said the border will remain closed to non-essential travel until at least June 21st. But administrators in Madawaska have taken a few steps that they're hoping will help local businesses pay their bills in the meantime. In April, the town partnered with the local Chamber of Commerce to sell $60,000 worth of gift cards, good at certain local businesses affected by the pandemic. Chamber Director Sharon Boucher says residents only had to pay for half the value of each card, with the town paying the other half.
Gives them that money in hand to be able to pay the bills that are coming in while they're not open. Is it going to cover all their bills? No, but it helps.
Boucher says the first round of certificates went on sale at 8 a.m. and were snatched up in just a few hours, causing some chaos at the chamber.
Calls were dropping because there was just too much activity and people were getting frustrated and angry. So we had people outside at the door wanting to come in, putting their orders in the mailbox.
And while the gift card initiative was chaotic at first, Boucher says the response was encouraging. She says the overwhelming support was yet another sign that in the face of difficult challenges, the people and businesses of Madawaska are resilient and will fight to stay afloat.
We will come out of this okay. Yeah, we're going to hurt for a little while, but we're going to come out of this okay.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
And finally, today, data from the Small Business Administration show that since the start of the pandemic, more than 25,000 loans have been approved for small businesses in Maine, and almost 90% of applicants have gotten the funds. But some people are wary on taking on more debt while their businesses are ordered closed. Rebecca Garcia is one example. She opened a frame shop in downtown Bangor a year ago, and although she considers herself fortunate that her husband still has work, she says she is running out of options.
We love the idea of buying a business downtown Bangor. You know, we love art. We collect art. So this was the perfect business for us. And I've been working so hard the last 13 months. People stopped showing up. Basically, nobody was coming in the store. People, if they came, they were all afraid. We couldn't touch their credit card. They didn't want to touch our frame moldings. You know, people were scared. And then we were mandated to close. So my store has been closed since March 17th. Very unluckily for us, our big payments start kicking on April. Then we have so many expenses, a lease and insurance, utilities. I cannot keep paying. I just cannot keep doing it. I cannot keep losing thousands of dollars. Oh my God, what is sleep? The last 9 weeks, sleeping is I just can't. It's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm thinking and I'm trying to come up with a solution. Everybody's losing. So I'm trying to keep that in mind. You know, it's not just me. I really hope that they let us open. This is scary. We have 3 kids, you know? What's going to happen with my family?
And that was Rebecca Garcia, whose frame shop in Bangor has been closed for more than 2 months. Her profile was produced by Susan Sharon, and you can find all our deep dive coronavirus stories online at mainepublic.org. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a good weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.